Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Happy Wednesday. Today is Wednesday, February 21st, 2018. And welcome to Just Us Talks with Tisha. I am your host, Tisha Hillman. I am a Maryland-based attorney. I practice in the areas of family law, criminal law, and also personal injury. I want to start the show by talking about several things that have been in the media as of recent. Last week, if many of you can recall, there was a shooting in Parkland, Florida, at a high school. Parkland High School in Florida. And it was a shooting that left 17 people dead, several people injured. And the shooter himself was taken injured and unharmed into custody, also a high school student. Now, there's been several conversations in the media about gun violence, gun control, and what our country can do in these situations. And as you know, anytime there is a mass shooting, there is this conversation around gun violence and what the government can do about these things. And you know, it's always rinse and repeat, right? Because the same conversations occur over and over. And the most infuriating thing for me is that our government seems to only be able to offer thoughts and prayers instead of solutions. And so, you know, as an attorney, it's interesting to see the debate, because obviously, the Second Amendment of the Constitution is what many of the gun lobbyists, of course, what they promote when they're having this discussion, that away our guns, it's our constitutional right protected by the Second Amendment. And, you know, it's interesting when it comes to the Second Amendment, because this has always been a debate. And if you guys are not familiar with what the Second Amendment says, it states that a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And the interesting thing about that, first of all, I must cite the disclaimer that I am not a constitutional scholar. I don't know all the ins and outs of the Second Amendment or the implications that it has. Well, what I do know is that this has been a debate forever. What does it mean? What does it mean to have a well-regulated militia? What does it mean to the freedom of people to keep and bear arms? What does that all mean? I think it was 1999, I believe it was. Maybe it was shorter than that. It could have been 2004. I know that it has not been in place for as long as other states have or other jurisdictions have, but until the Heller case in the District of Columbia, you could not have weapons in the District of Columbia. So I know that it was not that long, because when I moved to go to law school, after law school, I moved to the D.C. area. I remember that the D.C. versus Heller case was not that old. So I would venture to say that it could have been 2009. I'm going to just double check that for you guys. But basically, you know, actually it's 2008. It was decided in 2008. So I knew it wasn't that long ago. But essentially, now we have a situation where the states, as well as the District of Columbia, people can own weapons, and it's not a situation where people's rights are going to be infringed upon, because I think that was the argument in the Heller case, where people were saying, even though the District of Columbia is not a state, that it's a territory or a jurisdiction, that people still have the right to own weapons. And so now, because of the Heller case, people can own weapons and have weapons in the District of Columbia. But of course, because it's about states' rights, every state has the authority to direct and to control how those weapons can be purchased, where those weapons can be purchased, whether it can be, whether weapons can be concealed or not, and all of the regulations around that. And so because of that, all of these states trying to protect the rights, as they see it, of their citizens, as it pertains to their ability to own weapons, but yet the federal government has to, of course, abide by what the Supreme Court does, as does the rest of the jurisdictions. But how it works is that the states cannot do less than what the Supreme Court has authorized. Now, they can do more. They can go further in terms of protections and things like that, but they cannot do less. But in any event, the Supreme Court has decided that it would be an infringement of people's rights if they could not own weapons. And so what you have is a country that is filled with guns. And so when you have a situation like the Parkland shooting or the shooting at the Aurora Theater or Sandy Hook or Vegas or Pulse Nightclub, or, I mean, we can go on and on as it pertains to these mass shootings because they happen all the time in this country. And I find it interesting that we always have this debate, we always have this conversation, but the end result is nothing. The end result is our elected officials only offer their thoughts and prayers. They never offer solutions. And folks, you know, you guys hear me talk a lot on the show about the government and our jurisdictions and the way that our public officials have failed us as a people. And, you know, as a lawyer, it's one of those things where you see the interworkings of the laws and how they're made and, you know, what the debates are and all these things. And so it's a problem when you have gun lobbies like the NRA, which is the largest gun lobby that we have, that lobby our elected officials, that pour money, millions and millions of dollars into political campaigns in order to make sure that laws are not passed, that they are not overly regulated so that they cannot get the guns on the streets. Basically, the gun lobby is pouring these millions of dollars into these political campaigns to make sure that nothing ever happens, that all the politicians offer is thoughts or are thoughts and prayers. And so, folks, I've said this on the show many times, and I'm sure I'll say it many more times. Until we have a situation where our elected officials are not beholden to the lobbyists, but are instead beholden to the people that voted them in office, we will have a stalemate on the things that are important to the average consumer. One of the other things that that happened recently, the Consumer Protection Board here in D.C. The purpose of the Consumer Protection Board was to protect the consumer. As you can imagine, it's in their name. It was to protect the consumer from scandalous and unscrupulous organizations and people, businesses, who would take advantage of the consumer. And so, as you probably remember, this president talked a lot about essentially cutting the red tape, and he had this whole pompous, I don't want to call it a ceremony, but it was supposed to be like a ceremony, if you will, where he had millions and millions and millions of pages of paper just stacked up, and he had this whole like thing. I don't even know what to describe it as. But basically, there was a red tape around all of these papers, and he ceremoniously cut the red tape, right, to show to corporations and to businesses that now we are cutting the government red tape to make it easier for you to essentially do business. The problem is doing business many times means screwing the consumer. But that's something that this administration has been absolutely okay with. And so there was a company, I think it was one of those payday lenders, right, which is a totally ridiculous and terrible, not really an organization, but a group of organizations, right? They have unscrupulous policies. Their interest rates are completely over the line of what would be considered to be usury. And so they've been regulated for a reason, because over a certain percentage in interest is usury, right? And we have usury laws in this country and under this administration, to be honest. I'm not sure if we still do, because essentially what was happening is there was a lawsuit where the Consumer Protection Review Board, they sued these payday lenders because they were charging 950% interest, folks. 950% interest beyond what would be considered to be usurious, right? And so what has happened in this administration, they have been, the Consumer Review Board basically has been told that they need to drop the lawsuit. Now, hear me when I say this. They have been told to drop the lawsuit by our government. Why? Because of lobbyists. Because the lobbyists who own our government, they do not want this lawsuit to go through. They do not want to be deregulated. They do not want to be regulated, because they want to be able to take advantage of consumers. And now you have it easier when you have an administration that cares more about the corporations under the guise of we're going to allow them, we're going to cut the red tape to allow them to do business so that they can make money and they can trickle that money down to the rest of you guys. But that's never going to happen. That's not what's happening. And it's not going to happen because, again, as I've said on this show, trickle-down economics does not work. It has never worked. It never will work, because people that are rich hold on to their money. They don't just shower it upon the poor. That's not how this works. So what happens is anytime these wealthy corporations get a tax cut, as they did back in December, anytime they get a tax cut, what happens is they end up giving the bonuses and showering money on the corporate executives and the CEOs and the people at the top. It's not the middle people or the people at the bottom that are making the least amount of money that sees these tax cuts. Instead, what we have is the people at the bottom and people at the middle now paying more taxes than the people who are getting these tax breaks in the amounts of millions and billions of dollars. And so they have those pools of money now to pour back into their government lobbying arms of their particular businesses, because most large organizations have a lobbying arm. And so they're able to pour this money into that arm in order to lobby our government to make sure that they continue to get these tax cuts, to make sure that they can continue to get, they can continue so that they're not regulated, and they can continue to charge people things like 950% interest. And so we have a very, very broken government. And the two examples I gave you were just gun regulation and regulation on usurious interest rates. And so that's just two small examples of how our government being owned by lobbyists infringes on the rights of the rest of us. And so when you have a situation like a mass shooting, it's difficult to look at the victims, the people that survived, to look at their families, to look at the people who are now mourning and burying the people that were killed, and to know that our government is not going to do anything to prevent another mass shooting. The only thing our government is going to do is to offer thoughts and prayers. And so, you know, one of the things that also happened in Florida was after this, Senator Marco Rubio spoke about his, again, offering his thoughts and prayers and things like that. And this is his home state of Florida. So to be able to look at these grieving families and to tell these people that you're only offering your thoughts and prayers, but to know that you're not going to do anything, I'm not really sure how some of these people sleep at night, honestly. But folks, that's our government at work. Those are our tax dollars at work. These are the people that have been elected to speak for the rest of us because they're beholden to the people with the money. And so the thing that I say every single week is, folks, to remember to vote, because the only thing that could potentially change things is to vote. Now, I know given the what's going on right now in Washington with the Russia investigation and all that kind of stuff with tampering into our election, you know, that could even sound crazy to say to go vote. But it's the only thing that we have in what I believe, what used to be our democratic system. But vote, local elections, state elections, and, of course, federal elections. But to vote in every single election, because as I always remind my listeners, it's more so the local elections, state elections, that are going to control your day-to-day lives, that are going to be impacted most. Your daily lives are going to be impacted most by those elections than so the presidential election or, you know, anything on a federal level. One of the other laws that I want to talk about that I just read about this morning is South Carolina has decided that they are going to pass a law, or at least that's what they're attempting to do, and I'm sure that it will pass. It has a lot of support on both sides of the aisle. And it's one of these new saggy, or I shouldn't even say new, because we've heard about these things in different states over the years. It's a law banning folks from wearing saggy jeans. Now, here's the thing about the whole saggy jeans thing. As you and I know, the people that are going to be impacted are black and brown folks. This is what happens many times when our laws are being implemented. And it's these microaggressions that can sometimes inform our elected officials. And so when these policies and these laws are being made, even though perhaps at the table when these discussions are being had and various versions of the bill are being voted upon, no one is necessarily outwardly saying, and I don't know because I'm not there, but I would assume that no one is outwardly saying, let's target black and brown folks. But we know that laws like this specifically target black and brown folks. And so this happens very, very often in the law. And so even when you have a law that is passed, that may not necessarily on its face, even though this one I do think is facially, racially motivated, right? But even if not on its face, if in its implication there is racial bias, there may be grounds to challenge it. And so I certainly hope that someone challenges this law, because even though it's not going to be, it's not going to be anything that's going to be criminal, at least in South Carolina, the penalties are going to be, it's going to be, I think they're issuing citations. And so it's like $25, $50, $100, or like community service or something like that. But I do know that throughout the country, other states and jurisdictions have done this. And so I'm sure that the degree of the penalties vary from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. But my problem as an attorney is that I know that in the implication of this particular bill, the implications are going to fall on black and brown folks and on no one else. Because let's tell the truth here, folks. That's what I'm all about. We tell the truth here. And the truth is, it's black and brown folks that, you know, have made this a part of our culture. I don't know why. I don't particularly like it. But it doesn't matter if I like it or not. As an attorney, I am about protecting the rights of people. And people have the right to, you know, have their pants hanging down if they want. If that's what they consider fashion, you know, do that. Because the problem with these types of things, other than being unnecessarily punitive on black and brown folks, is that it forms a slippery slope. And in the law, we talk a lot about that, you know, proverbial slippery slope. Because bad laws make bad policy decisions. And so what's to say that a group of legislators will not now say, well, I don't like dreadlocks, and so dreadlocks are now banned? Who's to say that that won't later happen? Because we've already seen that in the Supreme Court, they've decided that an employer can say to their employees, you cannot wear dreadlocks, right? And obviously, again, this is another example of how black and brown folks are implicated in these sorts of decisions. And so people can take their racial microaggressions, put them into policies, and put them into law that impact people. And this is the example that I talk a lot about of white supremacy and what that actually means and what racism actually looks like. That's what racism actually is. It's having the power to make decisions, to have a racial, you know, to have a racial motivation, and then to be able to have the power on top of that to influence and to disrupt the lives of an entire race of people. And that's exactly what this looks like. So you can tell a group of black women that your afro is considered to be unprofessional, or your dreadlocks are considered to be unprofessional, right? That's exactly what that looks like. And so when I say a slippery slope, this is just one example of that slippery slope, because at what point will we say we're dictating fashions, and at what point are we saying we're discriminating against people because of their race? I don't know, folks. You tell me. You tell me your thoughts. If you want to join in the conversation, call in at 215-383-3872. Again, that's 215-383-3872. But, folks, just know that racism and things like that can turn into power decisions that can influence the lives of people for generations to come. And that's problematic. And so when we're talking about having more people represent the people, we're talking about diversity, not just in racial and ethnic diversity, but also gender diversity or gender orientation or sexual orientation diversity, things like that, when it comes to our elected officials. Because if you don't have elected officials who look like you, it's a lot harder to have your voice at the table and to have your ideals at the table, the things that are important to you at the table, if there's no one at this proverbial table that looks like you. And so it's very encouraging to see so many women of color and people from the LGBT community representative of the people that are running for office as of late. So it's been great with the Me Too movement and all of these things to see the surge in women deciding that they want to run for office. And that's largely in part, I believe, to all of the mistreatment that women have had to endure with things being the status quo. The laws that are made not considering women because there's not enough women at the table. And so, folks, make sure that you stay tuned to the laws and the policies and the things that are happening in your local jurisdiction because they matter. And they're going to impact your life or the life of someone you know. And so you want to make sure that you're informed as to what's happening because it can impact your life. And so finally, folks, what I wanted to kind of go back to is, again, talking about gun control. And the reason I wanted to go back to this is because this is going to be a debate that's going to continue, right? It's going to be something that's every single cycle it's going to happen. And so I wanted to go back and talk about the Second Amendment and gun rights as it pertains to people of color. And the reason I want to do that is because when we're having this debate, people of color are largely left out of the gun control debate because one of the things that happens, folks, as you know, if you are a convicted felon, you are not allowed to own weapons. If you are a convicted felon, there are places that you cannot live. In many states, you cannot vote, even though there is some movement around that and restoring the rights of convicted felons to vote, which I think is a great movement. Financial aid. So if you wanted to go to school, if you wanted to go to college, often if you're a convicted felon, you cannot get federal aid to allow you to go to college. And as you guys have heard me talk on the show before, far too often in our justice, we are rounding up black and brown folks for no reason, often, and labeling them convicted felons because of our broken judicial system, where you have people of color that are arrested, wrongfully convicted, maybe being held in jail on bond they can't make because maybe they're impoverished, and more likely to have a public defender, therefore more likely to take a plea deal because, as I stated before, public defenders don't have the time to prepare for trial. And so it's this vicious cycle where now you have more people of color that are labeled convicted felons because of a broken system. And so now you have a situation where everyone is in the discussion about gun control. Everyone is in the discussion about owning weapons. But what is missing is the voices of people of color because of the racial issues that are underneath them. And so, you know, every time there's a mass shooting, someone posts a meme that says, I know how to fix gun control. Everybody who's black, go out and buy a gun today. And, you know, before the end of the week, there will be something on gun control. And that's absolutely true. But why is that? Why is that? Unfortunately, that's all the time we have today. So we're going to have to delve into that topic at another time. And I do believe that it's a good conversation to have because those voices are missing from this larger debate. And again, everyone deserves a seat at the table. But next time, folks, we're going to have to bring your own fork, bring your own spoon, and come to the table next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. Until then, thank you so much for tuning in to Just Us Talks with Tisha. And as I always state, sometimes when it comes to the law, it's just us.